WSER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Good morning.
Let's go.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. My name is Sophie. Hope you're having a wonderful Saturday morning, and what a gorgeous day it is. And if you're in the mood for some art, well, we've got plenty of it, and there's heaps happening this weekend as well. So don't forget to check out So Hot this week on the So Hot Right Now page on 2SER.com. Today, though, we're going to be chatting about FAMBO, which is a queer contemporary arts family festival. It's the first time it's happening, so we're going to be chatting to the festival creator all about that. Also, Tali Olatia returns chat Predator and the kind of scandal that's surrounding the film right now. Also, in Alice Springs, closer to October, the Pachima Festival in Lights will be happening in Alice Springs. There's a gorgeous light festival out in the desert, and we're going to be chatting to Rhoda Roberts all about that. But first, the National Theatre of Parramatta has announced its 2019 season, and we're going to be chatting to the executive producer of the National Theatre of Parramatta about what we can expect next year. But first, here's a tune from Immigrant Union. This one's called I Can't Return. You're into SCR. that there is Immigrant Union with I Can't Return. You're listening to So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie. The Riverside and National Theatre of Parramatta have just dropped a stellar new lineup of performances for next year, questioning how our identities are impacted by technology, sex and material obsessions, and show the importance of unpacking diversity on a stage. Executive producer Joanne Key is here to grace us with all the goodies in store for the upcoming program. Good morning, Joanne.
Hi, Sophie. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Not a problem. It's always exciting around this time of year because everyone's unveiling their programs. What are you excited about this year's program?
I am excited about all of the program and about how we're just sort of moving forward into a stage where we're looking at plays that are really, challenging and exciting. And I think they're really contemporary. There's a little bit of sort of dystopian and stuff around a Black Mirror kind of vibe, and there's the amazing production of White Pearl, which has got Felicia King, who's a playwright you're going to hear a lot about, and that's a co-pro with Sydney Theatre Company. But actually, as I was just mentioning to you earlier, it's fascinating because that's actually got six different Asian characters, all from different backgrounds, and I'm just really very excited about that because it's a really different viewpoint on a play, and it was actually going to be a world premiere, but we're being beaten to the punch by someone in the UK.
How dare they?
Yeah.
So rude.
So rude. But we're super, super excited because Felicia is just such a talent.
Fantastic. So of this program, you have three Australian premieres. Can you talk more about those ones?
Sure. We have one that we've actually commissioned ourselves. It's Comedy of Errors, and we have commissioned Hilary Bell, playwright, to do an adaptation. That one's a little bit different. I mean, we have a really strong youth program, and that one's actually for ages 7 upwards.
Okay.
And that's an introduction to Shakespeare, and it's sort of a 55-minute, it'll just be so funny and hysterical. And I personally, myself as an adult, really, really want to see that one. If the auditions were anything to go by, it's going to be so much fun.
Mm.
Yeah. And the other two is Girl in the Machine, which is by Steph Smith, and that one's about a world where there's a couple and a black box kind of comes into their lives, and then of course the other one was White Pearl, which I already mentioned.
Yeah. You also have a couple of world premieres, correct?
Yes, it is. They sort of all get bundled into each other.
I love it.
So that one is the Comedy of Errors. Mm-hmm. And that one's Comedy of Errors this year coming up.
Fantastic. So you mentioned that one's actually for a young age group. How do you find, how is it for youngsters, like kind of getting into theatre? How do they love it when they kind of see that on stage, especially when it's something as dense as Shakespeare?
Yeah, they do. The response actually from young audience is sometimes, I actually really love watching the audience because the reactions are just so honest, and you really know you've nailed it because they're not polite.
No, the children don't really have a filter whether they like it or not, do they?
No, no. Yeah.
Great. So some of the things you mentioned before was like technology and that Black Mirror-esque. Can you talk more about that one?
Sure. So we, with the first two of our shows, like Grounded is an amazing play by a guy called George Brandt. And actually, it's a one-woman play, and it's going to be acted by Emily Javier. And indeed, Anne Hathaway acted in it in Broadway, and they're making a movie of it. So when I read that script, it just was like, this is so incredible. So she's a fighter pilot, and she's actually flying, you know, real fighter pilots, and then circumstances change and they move her to the chair force. So in fact, she's looking at a virtual reality world, but it's a real world because they're targeting real live targets, and that's how people actually kill, and that's how war happens now. Mm. And it's just how her world kind of unravels, because the capacity for separating fact from fiction and going home to her family, and it's a really powerful and an amazing play.
Mm. Like, the National Theatre of Parramatta, of course, is based in Riverside and Parramatta, so mm-hmm. Western Sydney. Do you see a lot more people coming through now, like kind of going through there and just going, I really want to come here just to hear more diverse voices?
Absolutely, yeah. We're actually part of Riverside Theatres, and we're finding it's really fantastic. We're getting feedback from people about these are stories we want to hear, because part of our remit is actually putting the nation on stage. So we want to present plays where people can relate and that resonate with their individual stories, but also that the people who are on the stage might look more like a representation of what you would see when you walk down the street.
Excellent. So, you know, you're working with Sydney Theatre Company on some of these productions. Are you working with any other companies as well?
This year we're not, but in the past we've worked with Griffin and with Apocalypse Theatre. So we do love collaborations and partnerships.
Excellent. So last year the show centralised on identity, belonging and place. Is there a bit of a focus around all the programming for this year?
Yeah, there is for this year. And I'm just, it's really funny because I'm actually so thinking of 2019 and actually 2018. We're still going with
yeah.
it. And in fact, we've got one play that's coming up at the end of the year, which is Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam. And in fact, our theme that ran through was about family and relationships. And the play, which is amazing, for Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam, is being directed by Darren Yap. And it's a novella by someone called Peter Goldsworthy, and Steve Rogers has adapted it. And it's about a perfect, perfect family, husband, wife, daughter and son. And they want a perfect world, so they close out the news and they just live within their little bubble until the young girl gets leukemia. And then the father makes a promise that, because she's scared about dying, and the father makes a promise that, I'll actually die with you. And so it's this incredible moral dilemma, challenge, and when the director Darren Yap actually did some research about it at Westmead, the doctor said that that's actually a really common response from parents.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So even though the material might be, you know, a little bit heavier than, you know, a fun night out at the theatre, I would really, really urge people to come to it, because it's just so, the play is so beautifully written by Stevie, and then the topics are so moving. And it's, you know, I think theatre is a great way that people can start generating conversation. And this is certainly one that, even in the rehearsal room and in the auditions, it's caused great debate. Like, would you do that? Or why would you do that? And it's a really fantastic play.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like you have an amazing program for 2019. Can't come soon enough, only in October. But Joanne, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks a lot for having me here.
Not a problem. That was Joanne Key in the studio. She's the executive producer of the National Theatre of Parramatta. We'll put all those details up on where you can find the program on 2ser.com and see what you can check out. Here's a tune now from Pins. This one's called Young Girls. Oh, that one didn't work, so let's go with Surfer Blood instead.
Flow. Some 2SER.com.
Hi, I'm Craig Donarski, Director of Casula Powerhouse Arts Centre in Liverpool. We've got hundreds of things for you to be a part of this year. Entry to the centre is always free and we're open 7 days except for public holidays. Enjoy breakfast, lunch or brunch at Bellbird Dining and Bar, featuring fresh produce harvested from our organic kitchen garden. We've got a special event from the 13th to the 16th of September, the Pacifica Film Fest. Join us for a vibrant opening night on Thursday the 13th of September, followed by a weekend of film and culture. The Pacifica Film Fest, entering its 5th year, brings the best of independent film from right across the Pacifican region to the big screen. Check out all this and a lot more at CasulaPowerhouse.com.
On 2SER, it's cool and crisp guitar pop from Brisbane trio The Goonsacks and their new album, We're Not Talking. Loads of charm and pristine melodies will be spinning it all week on Breakfast, Drive and Static, where you can win copies. We're Not Talking by the Goonsacks, the new feature album on 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.
You're on So Hot right now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Now, there has never been any event quite like FAMBO in Sydney before. It's the inaugural Queer Contemporary Arts and Culture Festival that is 100% queer families and kids inclusive and on for one day only. We have in here today Artistic Director and Queer Parent Jen Blake to talk more. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
It's the first time it's ever happened.
That's right, yeah. So there isn't an equivalent festival that I can find in Australia or internationally where I've looked, which I was a little bit surprised about because it sort of seems a bit obvious.
Mm.
But, yeah, I've sort of snatched up the idea and done what I can with it. So, yeah.
So for people who don't know, what is FAMBO?
So FAMBO is a queer, as you said, it's a queer contemporary arts festival. The focus is it's for kids and families. It does centre LGBTQIA plus families and children. But it is for everyone and their kids that want to come and celebrate contemporary queer arts and culture. And I suppose give them an opportunity to have their children in that environment and having a bit better understanding about what that community might look like.
Because you work in the arts as is.
I do.
So, yeah, so when you kind of got this idea, was there a space that you saw like kids aren't very welcome in these spaces or?
Not so much. Look, I think I wouldn't want to make a huge call on that because I think being a parent, and I've still got quite small children, I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, I think I am quite isolated in a lot of ways from the contemporary art scene, and there's probably lots of things going on that's just, you know, I've missed because I've been otherwise busy. So I think there are a number of things that do come up, and I've always felt that I am quite welcome to bring them. It's just it can be difficult wrangling children in those environments and do you want to bring them?
Mm.
So I think, yeah, spaces which have contemporary art that adults can enjoy and at a level that, you know, is very engaging for adults. If you can bring your kids in that and it can engage them as well, I think that's where the sweet spot is.
Great. So how are you going to wrangle this sweet spot?
Yeah, I know. Well, I think, you know, that's where the artists come in. I'm really excited about the artists that we've got on board for FAMBO. There was a lot of enthusiasm coming from some really exciting Australian queer contemporary artists, and they've really risen to that challenge of how do I do essentially the same kind of art that I'm used to and that is part of my practice, and how do I find a way for children to sort of access that or to meet families somewhere in that. Most of the artists have found they haven't really had to change their practice so much. I think contemporary art already offers so much to children, so it's really just having a little bit more of an awareness about how to have that invitation to kids and families.
Yeah. So who are some of the artists that are on board?
So we have Benji Ra and Coco Carey are going to be doing a voguing workshop for families, which will be pretty amazing. And I'm also really excited about Shaman Suku in his drag persona. Rada Labia is going to be doing a really exciting cultural sort of almost a little bit of a lesson and about his culture and his family at the same time as getting to do some cooking with your kids, which is the Banana Power Workshop. I've also got artists like Kieran Butler, Dennis Golding, Nicole Barricat and the fabulous inaugural Miss First Nations 2017, I think it was. What year are we in? Josie
yeah.
Baker.
So, oh, Josie, yes.
Josie will be doing some story times and pop-up stories throughout the day and kind of emceeing and sort of hosting the day all over.
So she's part of the Black Divas, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so heaps of fun stuff, it seems, performance-wise.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate that, as I said, it's such a vibrant art scene of that's just filled. It's a landmine of queer artists out there. So it was very, very easy to populate the festival in the way I envisioned it. And the fact that artists have been so supportive, it's really brought it together.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're getting kids into art, there's just sometimes they take it, they don't. With all the workshops that's happening, how do you feel the kids will kind of react to it?
Well, I'm really interested to see that myself on the day because I think it is hard to, and that's across the arts, to imagine someone else's experience. And that's what, as arts workers, you know, we have to constantly force ourselves to think outside of ourselves and other people's experience. And so I've used that I guess, skill in this instance as well. And I've also run some stuff by my kids. You know, I'm constantly being like, what do you think of that? And what are you excited about? And they do get very excited, I think, by the ideas that are there. And I've also found that when they've gone to contemporary arts, and I think my son saw Sharman's performance at Underbelly this year, and he was just so excited by it all and so sort of stimulated. And I really knew then this is really going to work. Mm. I'm ready to be proved wrong on the day. And I'm, you know, this is an experiment of sorts. It is very new.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens. And I'm really eager for feedback from kids and families after the event to see, okay, what may not have worked or what was challenging. And same for the artists, to just see how can we develop this to be everything it can be.
Yeah, because it sounds like just like a really great entry point to get families and young kids into contemporary art, which can be sometimes, even for adults, a bit, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and I think that's it. And they're our future arts supporters, really. Mm. And I know when I go to Brisbane and go to Quaggoma, my kids just love the Children's Arts Centre there, and we've spent a lot of time in that. And I've really enjoyed it myself. I've probably spent more time sitting there, you know, creating really cool stuff in those spaces. So I think there's a need for participation in the arts by adults and children. I think we live in a very tactile kind of culture as it is, and that I think that's sort of bleeding into the galleries and museums and institutions anyway. So I think how do we, when we're creating new things, how do we make those quite tactile? So the family space is a really kind of easy place to start. But you're right, they'll become our future people that come, and that's sort of interesting to see where that might take things to.
Yeah, because the other thing I find interesting is, like, you know, a lot of galleries and places are having, like, oh, we're going to have this great program where, like, you know, you can feel like a kid again. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, all right, but what about the actual kids? Where are your children's program?
I think there's so many adults that want to come to FAMBO, and I really encourage that. But I also think most adults also know someone with kids, or they're sort of, a godparent or an auntie or somehow. And that's, you know, that's how families look in our culture as well. So I'm really interested in adults who are really keen for this. I don't think you're probably too far away from finding some kids to be able to bring along to as a good excuse.
Fur babies allowed?
I did really want it to be from zero onwards. The venue 107 is, you know, it's a tricky venue in the sense of getting around with sort of prams and really small kids. So I have sort of tried to limit it and encourage the 4 to 12 type of age group. It's mostly directed at that. But I do think there are bits and pieces that little ones will enjoy, like the Heaps Small Party by Heaps Gay. And there's also going to be a camp kitchen with a little lunch, like sort of rooftop lunch with rainbow families that will be good for the little ones too, but it is mostly for sort of that age, sort of 3 or 4 onwards this time.
Just this time.
Yeah.
But it's all happening end of this month at 107 Projects, as you mentioned. But Jen, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. That was Jen Blake. She's the founder of FAMBO, a queer festival for all kinds of families. It's a one-day event. We'll pop all those details up and where you can get tickets on 2ser.com. Here's a tune now from Joe Williams. It's called Planxty Irwin. All the Stones with Gunner Home.
2SER, live and streaming at 2SER.com.
You're on So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. I hope you're having a wonderful Saturday. It's such a gorgeous day. So do get out there, enjoy the day, see some art. Sydney Contemporaries are on, all your usual galleries are open. Go out there and see it. But now on the show, it is time for your pop culture fix.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks on 2SER.
Good morning, Talia Olatia.
Hello, Sophie Lai.
How are you doing this fine, warm Saturday?
The warm weather. I'm really excited for it.
So excited. It's been so long.
I know. I'm just like, I'm a bit torn because I've recently developed, like, oh no, that sounds wrong. I heard it in my head and I was going to say, I've recently got into a really nice relationship with my hot water bottle. And then I went, no, don't say that. And then I just said it because I sounded crazy as I was having a conversation in my head. But there's a part of me that's going to miss my hot water bottle. And then there's another part that's going to be like, oh, thank goodness that I don't need it anymore.
Oh, such a good
swings and roundabouts. Swings and roundabouts.
But heaps happening this week.
Yes, you have seen the new Predator movie.
I have.
I have not, and I want to hear all about it.
So it is pretty much a continuation of the franchise. So this one, it's directed by Shane Black, who you might know from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Iron Man 3. Mm-hmm. And he kind of brings his very signature dark masculine humor to this franchise.
Yeah.
So premise of this one is basically a military sniper played by fashion model Boyd Holbrook.
Can I just say, before we came on air, Sophie said, just warning, I'm going to be saying fashion model a lot. So that was the first one.
Yeah, well, Boyd Holbrook, he was a fashion model.
Two.
High fashion.
Three. Model. Let's do a fashion count.
Yeah. But, yeah, so he plays this sniper and he's during a mission, his team is pretty much torn apart by a predator.
Yeah.
And he's the only living witness. So he manages to grab some of the predator's gear, sends it back home so he has evidence that exists before he's like military carded back and they're like, you saw no alien, you're just crazy. So he gets a bit shafted there. The thing was,
oh my god, so they just have gone, oh no dude, you've got severe PTSD.
Yeah, so they were gonna put him into mental hospital for with other veterans. He gets put in a bus with a bunch of other soldiers who are all suffering from PTSD and other mental issues, and they become this little ragtag team who then end up like fighting the predator in the end.
How do they then come back to encounter the predator again?
Yeah, so the fact that he sent back the predator's gear to his home is where his son, his autistic son, then opens, and then somehow his son has a knack for languages, and then somehow manages to hack into the predator's mainframe.
Naturally. That's just what kids can do these days.
Of course.
Completely alien
technology.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So they have to kind of go on a rescue mission after the predator escaped, because the predator was actually caught by a government facility.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Yeah. So it kind of goes on a killing rampage, which is where Olivia Munn comes in, because she plays a scientist named Casey Beckett. She's fantastic, actually. She's one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Olivia Munn is always perfection, whatever she plays.
She really is. So the predator escapes that facility and she's like chasing it down, where it encounters the bus full of veterans who are like en route to the loony bin.
A strong patriotic theme running through this movie, it seems.
And then they all escape together and then they're like, oh my God, he's going after my son. They all go and try and find his son, who's played by Jacob Tremblay from The Room.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, Room, not The Room.
The Room.
Not in that room.
You made it The Room.
Not The Room.
Just Room.
Just Room. So, yeah, they kind of, what they soon find out is the predator that they're dealing with at the beginning is only a little one.
Oh.
and he's actually being
baby
hunted.
Baby predator.
Well, it's a smaller version of the species.
Oh, okay.
Because a much larger one is actually tracking it because it's gone and done some duty things in space that the rest of the predators ain't happy, and they've sent like a 10-foot predator to hunt it down instead.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Tip of the iceberg. So, yeah, right. That is the new predator in a nutshell.
What did you think about it, like, overall?
It was fun. It was actually, like, a fun flick, fun action romp. Like, it was funny. It didn't take itself seriously, which is what I really enjoyed about it. Mm. Like, people were just laughing throughout the screening.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, there is an alien dude with tentacles running about just killing things.
There is something comedic in
there. There is something comedic. And then they're just going to do like a long shot of someone's like intestines falling out just for a little bit of gore. And then like, and because it's Shane Black, the banter is so quick.
Yeah.
And Olivia Munn's character, Casey, she's like right there with the boys and she's just like constantly like firing back. And the other thing I loved about her character is like she's a scientist. She gets called in and they don't really mansplain that much to her. And I'm like, yes.
how refreshing.
It's so refreshing. And then it's just stuff's going down. Things are going to hit the roof. And then she just grabs a gun and starts shooting things. And she's like a good shot. And you're like, oh, she can handle herself. Great.
Yeah.
It's not like any of this babysitting kind of thing that's like, oh, we've got.
She's just there to be pretty kind of thing.
Exactly. Which brings us to the kind of scandal side of the promotion of this film.
Yes. And Olivia Munn speaking out.
Yeah.
Upon hearing, so what had happened is this guy, actor, who had a nothing role, essentially, in the movie. And when I say nothing role, maybe a minute screen time.
Yeah.
He had this scene where he was supposed to hit on Olivia Munn's character. And the actor is Stephen Wilder Strigel, who is a friend of Shane Black, but also a convicted sex offender.
Yeah.
So, and it's, I think it's one of those things that because he was friends with Shane Black, he was obviously in like Shane Black's like black spot in terms of friends where you just go, oh no, he's still a good guy and he just needs a leg up and he's an actor and I'm in a position where I can give him a little bit
of
a role.
And he's been in other Shane Black films. Like he was in Iron Man and another one. Like he's been in a few of his films.
Exactly. So I think that that's why it was cast. And 20th Century Fox and a lot of these places in terms of auditioning is that you don't, they can't ask you your background history when it comes to these kind of things. So, I mean, Shane Black knew of his friend's past, but no one else knew. And so what happened is it then came unveiled that he was a sex offender and that he had essentially groomed a 14-year-old girl who was a distant relative via email and had served 6 months jail time for that and, as a result, convicted sex offender
registered
on list.
Yep. Yes. All of that.
Anyway, Olivia Munn found out about this. They'd already shot the scene. Olivia Munn found out about this and raised it with 20th Century Fox to be like, this is what's going on.
Mm.
They very quickly cut the scene and Shane Black then got in a bit of trouble to be like, well, why didn't you tell anyone? Like, you have continually essentially put some actors in really uncomfortable positions because they didn't know this history about this guy. And so Shane Black has since come out and said, you know, I didn't. Essentially, I think that
it was such a
non-apology. Yeah. And it was also like, oh, I didn't know how bad it was. So I just thought, like, I don't know how anyone goes, oh, I just thought you served 6 months jail time for grooming a 14-year-old and asking them for sex. I didn't think it was that bad. I wanted to give you a second chance. Like, the writing's kind of already on the wall about what he had done.
So I think everyone thought, it's like, oh, no, it was like something that was interpreted as malicious when he was just like, you know, trying to bring up a 14-year-old girl in a self-esteem.
It was very
and it was like,
implicit.
Okay, at the beginning maybe, but you look at some of the later emails and they are so explicit.
Yeah. And so at that point, you really have nowhere to hide behind.
Mm.
And so then what kind of happened is Olivia Munn, not that she was left out to dry by everyone, but essentially was because at the Toronto International Film Festival, she was doing these media interviews where it was supposed to be the whole cast of Predator and it was just her.
Mm.
And you could tell that she was very angry about it and she spoke very openly about it. And I think what was really interesting in the whole Time's Up movement, that when it comes to like, you know, you – essentially can't be a sexual predator, no pun intended with the movie being predator, but you can't be a sexual predator and work in this industry. Like, time's up, we're going to call it, we're going to do whatever. And so it's like, well done to Olivia for standing up to that and saying, no, I'm not going to accept this. I'm still going to come to these interviews and do what I have to do, but I'm going to say that this is what's going on. And yeah. I think that 20th Century Fox and the whole movie would have wanted to shut that down, because the only reason why we know about it is because Olivia made it public.
Yeah, and she was like, yeah, they were actually silent for a couple of days, and when she spoke out to the public, they got really upset. They're like, why? Yes. We got rid of the scene. Everything's all cool.
Yeah, like, we don't talk about this. This is fine.
But it was just everyone's silence at the film festival. And it was just like all her male co-stars didn't say anything until everyone was like, the public were like going, why aren't you saying anything? Yeah.
And that's the thing. It made it into such a bigger issue, because if they'd all just done a united front going, we won't stand for this, and everyone goes, clap, 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 move on. And then she continued to do interviews. She was on Ellen. And again, it came up. And again, Olivia's telling what it is the thing is. So, like, I mean, in that sense, in terms of the Time's Up movement, a huge platform, bigger than what was first intended, but still, like,
yeah,
just shows. Still a while to go.
Yeah, but it was just that complicit male science is like, you can talk, but we'll just... We're listening.
Yeah. And some of them were like, we were being supportive to Olivia in private. And I was like, mate, do it in public then. Like, it's not that hard.
It really isn't that hard. One of the other things in it was when I watched the film, and the fact that there wasn't a guy cracking onto Olivia was what made part of it for me, the film, better.
So the scene that they cut was actually a good idea.
I think
good
so.
Good editing.
I think so.
Well, it's kind of worrying. It's like a good thing that they caught it before it went out. Because then imagine if no one had said anything and then it was raised while the movie was out. And also, like, in this scene, he's hitting on
the only female scientist
character.
Like, yeah.
Like, that, again, doesn't point anyone in a good light. So, yeah.
Oh, well.
Predators. what can you do?
Well, Tali, thank you for another Gaggle of Geeks. We'll chat to you more on the podcast.
You will indeed. Thank you, Sophie.
You'll also probably hear me say, fashion.
I think that's four.
Yes.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Tali Olatia there. As I mentioned, catch us all on the podcast. Just look us up on any good podcasting platform, from iTunes to Google to, yeah, everywhere. We're there. Wooshka. Hi. You are listening to So Hot, and your weekly dose of arts and culture. And coming up, we are going to be talking about the only Indigenous light festival of its kind, and it's returning to the centre of Australia, Alice Springs. We're chatting to the curator next, but to get you there, here is a bit of Palms with Bad Apple. Drums there with Bad Apple. You're listening to 2SER. Pachama, a festival in light, is the only Indigenous light festival of its kind. Held in the natural landscape of Alice Springs, visitors can wander through installations that celebrate Aboriginal art. Back for its third consecutive year, Bundjalung woman and renowned First Nations creative director Rhoda Roberts is curating the festival for the second year in a row. She joins us on the line now. Good morning, Rhoda.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Now, for people who don't know, what does Pachama actually mean and which language group does it come from?
So Pachama, it means to light up, but not only to light up in lights, but to light up your knowledge with inside. It sheds a light on understanding. And, of course, it's from the Central Arrernte people of Central Australia, Mbwantwa, which their lands include Alice Springs.
Right. And for this year, what are some of the highlights of the festival that visitors can expect?
Look, it's so exciting. I saw some of the artwork that's been rendered last night and it just looks incredible. We put a thematic to this year and that thematic was cultural freedom because we're at a time now where we see our artists painting their stories the way they want to paint. While some of the paintings have adapted, we now take canvases that came out of sand paintings into brand new technology of the 21st century. And so we have this really incredible cultural freedom where we're able to use our art, whether it be politically, economically, culturally. But the most important thing, it creates such a social fabric for our communities. And so Pachama celebrates the art practices from the eastern, western and central desert regions of Australia. So many people will know they were often referred to as dot paintings. But apart from the installations, so we have installations where you can walk around, we've taken the artwork and put it into lights. And the other big component of Pachama is we light the McDonald Ranges. So this year we're looking at lighting it up to represent how we operate with cycles, from sunrise to sunset peoples and the moon cycles.
Wow. And, you know, when you're kind of curating something as large as this and in a desert landscape, what are some of the, like, issues that come up with, you know, curating something in such a spectacular outdoor area?
Of course. It's the greatest outdoor gallery in the world in the heart of the nation in Central Australia. So incredible challenges, but it's extraordinary. I think one of the great challenges for our artists and myself is making sure we work in a very two-way situation because some of their works contain cultural material and we have to be sensitive to that. So ensuring that that work is highlighted in the best possible way with the cultural understanding that it requires. And that's a big thing for people taking a story that's been told for centuries, such as Budgerigar dreaming, and putting it into an installation that has UV lights on it, for example. Mm. Quite extraordinary. So some of the challenges is how we adapt it, but it's just amazing to watch the artists when they see their works lit up or that we've made these installations. So one of the big things, we get a lot of families to the event, which is just exciting and so fantastic. And so this year, one of the artists has placed her work onto we've made our own jumping castle. So the kids can actually jump on these domes and they'll light up and it's got this most incredible artwork on it. That's making it relevant for today, but the kids will ask about the story of the art on this, and so they'll get story time with that. And so there's all this sense across the festival of ensuring that our visitors get a little sense and a deeper knowledge of the cultural makeup and beliefs of the spirituality of Aboriginal Australia. So we also have a festival hub where we have a program that showcases music. We've got Electric Fields playing on Saturday the 29th.
Incredible.
So we're thrilled about that. And of course, you know, Zachariah Fielding from Electric Fields is from Mimalee community in Amata around those areas in Central Australia. We have, yes, music, dance. We've got films. We've got lots of discussions, in conversations, workshops, all manner of things for all people. And this year we're expanding, so our public program will not only be in the precinct at Desert Park, it will also be in Todd Mall in the town centre.
Yeah, wow. Sounds like it's just going to, the whole city's going to light up in Alice.
It feels like it, and it's really exciting. But I think for the local mob, it is quite extraordinary because, you know, they are the hosts of this incredible international festival. I think it's the only First Nations festival that is a light festival around the world. And so they're, again, jumping on something brand new and making it so relevant to the stories they want to tell. And that's, I think, the beauty of this event is the local custodians are there along the whole way of when we're doing the festival, but also you get to meet them in the talks and the gatherings that we have as part of our knowledge program.
Fantastic. Now, you know, we're based in Sydney here at 2SER, and not everyone can access it. But Rhoda, you're also the head of programming at the Sydney Opera House, and we can see some of the works as part of the lighting up of the sail. Is that correct?
That's correct, Badu Gili. It occurs 365 days a year at sunset and later in the evening. Those times are just during daylight saving, of course. But it creates an enormous visibility for our visitors to the Opera House that it is Aboriginal land as well. The Opera House, just because it's got the building there, doesn't mean it's not Aboriginal. Jubagali, we call it. And it's just wonderful to have that visibility and that offering for visitors to get a real taste of the diversity of culture across the country through Badu Gili.
Yeah, and who are some of the artists that have featured both at Badu Gili and at Pachima?
Well, in fact, one of our artists on Badu Gili, one of our women artists, and she paints women's ceremonies, and her works on Badu Gili is Aunty Patricia Ansel Dodds, and she does bush tomatoes and women's ceremony, and it just looks amazing on the Opera House. The whole sail just covers in red dirt, and then you see her artwork come through. She's also in one of our installations called The Gathering, which is a series of artists from around the Central Desert and Western regions painting about country. And her work there is quite extraordinary. It's very different to what we see on the Opera House sales. One of the other artists in the Badu Gili is Mervyn Rabuncha. And I'm really humbled that he was able to provide us work and be part of it. He, of course, comes from the Hermannsburg School of Watercolours, created by his relative, the late, great Albert Namatjira. Wow. And that just says to me, you know, a lot of people look at Albert's work and they think watercolours. But in fact, that old lawman was painting country. He just did it with watercolours. And the areas they paint are so sacred, but extraordinary. It taught me such a great lesson looking at his artwork, because on our agenda right across the world is what we're going to do in the future about water, right? And our water rights are so important. And Mervyn's artwork is also about looking and reading country. And he says, we don't do that much. He says, there is water there. You just can't see it because you don't know country. And so it's really fantastic. And of